And so we begin this news hour in Sudan, where the death toll has now reached 459 people killed during 11 days of conflict. Sporadic gunfire has been heard in some areas of Khartoum, and that is despite a new ceasefire brokered by the United States and regional powers on Monday. Several previous ceasefires between Sudan's army and the Rapid Support Forces paramilitary group have failed to hold. And in the past few minutes, the World Health Organization has warned of a high risk of biological hazard after a laboratory was seized. Let's go live to Hiba Morgan in Khartoum. Hiba, what more can you tell us this morning?
Well, there's been a lot of concerns about biological hazards here in the capital, Khartoum, even before this laboratory was seized by an armed group. It's not clear which armed group yet has seized or where exactly it's located. But some of the medics who we spoke to say that it could be located in the heart of Khartoum. That's where most intense fighting between the Rapid Support Forces and the Sudanese army have been taking place. But the doctors who we spoke to say that there are other biological concerns as well. The fact that there are dead bodies that have been piling up on the streets and in hospitals in closed spaces for days now without proper burial in high temperatures. So that's also causing concerns. And it's not clear, again, which side is taking over this national laboratory here in Khartoum. But fighting has been ongoing between the Rapid Support Forces and the Sudanese army in various districts around the capital. In the northern part of the capital, people say they were able to hear artillery strikes and they can see the fighter jets overhead, as well as in the twin city of Omdurman. People said that they were able to hear artillery strikes and that they had to stay inside their homes because they were worried that this ceasefire will not hold again.
I was going to ask you about the status of the ceasefire and whether it could best be described as holding, as completely broken, or tentative.
Well, it depends on the residential area that you're in. People in the southern and eastern parts of Khartoum have witnessed intense fighting over the past few days, but they say that today is relatively quiet. In the northern part of the capital, along the Nile Bank, people say they were able to hear artillery strikes and they could see the fighter jets. But when you go further north, people say that it's been quieter. One of the residents who we spoke to just a few minutes ago say this is the quietest day since the fighting started 11 days ago, and it's giving him the chance to consider evacuating his family. I'm not sure if you can hear that, but
yeah, that partly answers our question.
We can hear. It does indeed. We do hear heavy artillery and gunfire being exchanged between the Rapid Support Forces and the Sudanese army. So it looks like the ceasefire is not holding everywhere around the capital, Khartoum.
All right, we have our answer. Hiba Morgan reporting from the capital. Thank you very much. More people have been fleeing, and some governments are continuing with evacuations. With Khartoum's international airport closed, foreign governments are looking elsewhere to get their citizens out. The Dongola local airport is one option. That's in the northern part of the country, closer to Egypt. To the west, there's also the Shahid Sabera Airport. That's located in Sudan's Darfur region. Another possible evacuation route is through the Port Sudan International Airport. That's in the Red Sea province and a relatively short distance from the Saudi port city of Jeddah. Some roads that remain open can get people closer to Ethiopia, Egypt, and South Sudan. Land crossings with those countries have remained open so far. A lot of countries are looking to Djibouti also as a logistical hub. The U.S. deployed forces there before launching evacuations from Sudan. Japan and South Korea have sent medical teams there as a precaution. The U.S., France, Italy, the U.K., and Saudi Arabia were among the first countries to carry out evacuations, and that list is growing as the violence spreads across parts of Sudan. Now, the U.N. has said it is bracing for up to 270,000 people to flee Sudan into Chad and South Sudan. Faith Kasina is the regional spokesperson at the UNHCR. She joins us from Nairobi. Give us a sense of the numbers that we're seeing arrive in both those countries right now.
Thank you so much. So far, the most significant movements that we have seen of Sudanese into South Sudan and Chad. I'll start with South Sudan, where we have seen nearly 4,000 South Sudanese refugees who are in Sudan returning to South Sudan, and they're mainly coming in through border crossing points in the Upper Nile State. We are also seeing up to 20,000 people who've arrived recently in Chad along the border with Sudan. And so we continue to monitor the situation in the different neighboring countries. We don't yet have reports of arrivals in other neighboring countries. We do know that we do have reports of people, movement into Egypt, but we're working with authorities there as well just to verify the kind of movements that are going in and how many people are arriving.
What happens to the people who make it across one of those borders, right, either in Chad or in South Sudan? What happens to them once they get there?
So UNHCR teams are currently present in the border points in Chad and South Sudan. For example, in South Sudan, we've already set up or we're setting up registration centers where some of these arrivals can be registered. I should clarify and I should mention that in South Sudan, these are South Sudanese refugees who are returning to South Sudan. These are people who, have been able to make their way into the country. And so our support, apart from giving relief items at the border, is also to see how we can support them to move onwards to their areas, to their home areas. In Chad, we also have response teams on the ground along the border, working with governments and partners to ensure that we're able to provide humanitarian response and call relief items as people would need.
What does that response look like? So are they going to be living in tents? Do they have places to go? Are these people who tend to have relatives in those countries?
So in the case of South Sudan, as I said, these are people who fled South Sudan and are now coming back. We're seeing more people, opting to go back to their areas of origin or to their home areas. We're still working with governments to ascertain exactly where people, will be sheltering. But we are at the border points, trying to really work through this complex and complicated situation to ensure that they do have shelter. In Chad, we are working, again, with governments and partners to ensure that they have sufficient shelter, moving them away from border points. So where they're arriving is about 5 kilometers away, and so we're working with government and partners to ensure that they can be moved to safer areas, either within existing sort of refugee camps and local communities around the areas that they're arriving.
And one thing perhaps we should point out for our viewers is usually the first people who can leave a risky situation like what we're seeing in Sudan, they're actually those who have the means to leave and who are, relatively speaking, better off.
Sorry, I'm losing you. I can't really hear the question.
No, I was making the point that usually the people who manage to leave risky areas first are usually the people who have the means to do it and are relatively better off. Is that what you're observing?
I mean, we're observing people who are able to flee, arriving in these countries that I've just mentioned. We are also seeing that we have to, sort of work around the resources that we have in these different countries to receive the new arrivals. Bear in mind that these countries that are receiving the new arrivals already have existing large populations of refugees and internally displaced people. So they have challenges of their own in terms of responding to displacement situations in their country. So I'm not sure I answered the question correctly. I didn't quite hear the answer, the question, but this is what I can say in terms of our abilities to respond.
Absolutely.
In the countries of
Faith Kassina, thank you for sharing all that information with us. Thank you. Al Jazeera's Mohammed El Tayeb is in Khartoum, where people are trying to escape the violence.
We are now on this street, and this is one of the many buses heading towards Port Sudan. There are a number of families on board who want to get out of Khartoum. There are also a number of foreigners, including Turks and Egyptians. We will now go and speak to some of them to find out about their conditions and circumstances and how they managed to get out.
It's not safe for the buses to reach people's neighborhoods, and especially at night it's not safe because of the ongoing exchange of gunfire. The only time it's safe is in the morning.
Through this interview with Al Jazeera, I'd like to reassure my family in Saudi Arabia, mom, dad, and sisters, that I am well and safe. And soon, very soon, if God's willing, I will reunite with my whole family.
There are fears among the people that the situation may deteriorate because of lack of services and basic needs, such as water and food. All these things have prompted people in Khartoum to leave the city and search for a safer place and to leave the country. This bus is for people who have money to get transported outside Khartoum. There are others who don't have enough money to leave this area.
The bank application doesn't have any cash. The application is not even working. I don't understand why people are taking advantage of this situation. People must stand together, help each other, so that people can get out of this situation.
There is fear among the people of Khartoum that after the evacuation of foreign nationals, the city might become a war zone. That's why we see many people leaving. However, there are those who don't have enough money to leave Khartoum.